It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Out of work. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. 4.5 million of us, U.S., filed for unemployment last week. That brings to 26 million the total number of out-of-work Americans since the coronavirus pandemic began.
Economists believe the unemployment rate is close to 15%, but that may actually be a dramatic underestimate, since many people who have lost their jobs and have not yet been able to file for unemployment would not be counted.
Reporter Tom Costello says New York was among the states with the largest weekly increase in jobless claims. The U.S. House votes today on that $484 billion coronavirus stimulus package, provides a lifeline to fledgling businesses that are treading water in the midst of the health scare. Alabama Congressman Doug Collins.
We're going to vote it out today. It's going to get to the president's desk. He'll sign it, and those businesses who need this money are going to be able to get that help that they need, because we're in a time now in which we don't have the health of our country to think about. We have our economic health to think about. That's what's going to happen today.
The relief package includes money for hospitals on the front lines of the crisis, as well as funds to expand COVID-19 testing. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says there will be no blue state bailout for states in the Northeast hit hard by coronavirus. McConnell says he favors instead allowing those states to file for bankruptcy. McConnell's comments drew a sharp rebuke from New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy.
Come on, man. That is completely and utterly irresponsible. We will gut the living daylights in every state in America out of the services, the exact services that our citizens need right now.
New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo says McConnell's remarks smack of partisan politics.
It's one of the dumb statements of all time. He then says this is a bailout to the blue states, which was a really offensive statement. What he's saying is the blue states are the states that have the coronavirus problem.
But conservative economist Art Laffer says bankruptcy is a viable option for states plagued by the virus.
When I listen to the discussion of the states, especially Connecticut, especially Illinois, especially New Jersey, these states have been so bad in their fiscal controls that they have run out of money. They're in bad shape. People are leaving the states in droves. And then they want the federal government to bail them out? I don't think so. I mean, this is their problem. I mean, is Illinois, Michigan, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, these states have had a big problem long before coronavirus came, and coronavirus came along and just popped them. And they don't need to be bailed out by the federal government, believe me.
That's conservative economist Art Laffer. There's new pushback today against states planning to send people back to work, some as soon as tomorrow. Mula Lange has our report.
A new model often cited by the White House shows no state should reopen before May 1st, and that most should not until the end of May. The model shows states like Tennessee shouldn't reopen until May 20th, Texas June 7th, and Georgia June 19th. Yet these states plan to partially reopen over the next several days.
Georgia will be opening hair salons, barber shops, tattoo parlors, and bowling alleys tomorrow. The president thinks that's a bit too early.
I think it's too soon. They can wait a little bit longer, just a little bit, not much, because safety has to predominate.
The nation's leading infectious diseases expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, agrees. He's urging Georgia's governor to reconsider.
You know, if I were advising the governor, I would tell him that he should be careful, and I would advise him not to just turn the switch on and go, because there is a danger of a rebound.
President Trump says his CDC director was misquoted by the Washington Post about a possible resurgence of COVID-19 this fall.
Upset with the Post story, the president addressed the issue at a White House briefing.
He was misquoted. Totally misquoted.
But CDC Director Robert Redfield said the newspaper got the quote right.
I'm accurately quoted in the Washington Post.
However, Redfield said the headline was inappropriate. He warned that if there's a second wave of COVID-19 during flu season, it could be difficult. But Redfield also said the U.S. will be better prepared to deal with the virus. Greg Clugston, Washington.
They call it Tornado Alley. Oklahoma reeling from a string of deadly storms. Meteorologist David Parkinson.
There were so many tornadoes in Oklahoma, they got their normal April total of tornadoes in one day. So that should show you how active things are. And now all of that is moving east.
The twisters killed half a dozen people in Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Texas. News from the classroom today. School kids are not making the grade in several key areas.
American students are not doing well in three key subjects, U.S. history, geography, and civics. More than 42,000 eighth grade students were given tests. Less than 25% were proficient in those subjects. The results indicate a gap between white students and black and Hispanic students.
Correspondent Steve Foderman, the first ever virtual NFL draft is tonight. The Cincinnati Bengals select first. The NFL's Anna Isaacson says tonight's activities include the first ever draft-a-thon. It's to raise money for COVID-19 relief efforts.
While you're watching the draft, you will see in between the picks, you'll see players making call outs, talking about the work they've done in their communities. You'll see shout outs to healthcare workers and those on the front lines. You'll see PSAs for our six charitable partners who are receiving the funds.
We'll have more on the draft with Sonny in sports. Also ahead, Cuomo's controversial comments. Cats can contract coronavirus and the color-coded COVID-19 comeback plan.
Well, good afternoon to all. We're tracking a complex area of low pressure that'll be delivering rain at times over the next 18 hours or so. Weekend is approaching. It's a 50-50 affair weather-wise. I'll have all those forecast details coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right. Hang on, Kevin. We'll see you then. Checking the headlines from New York and Pennsylvania. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is taking some heat for getting flip with protesters who fear the economic shutdown of late will cost them their livelihood.
Now, there are people hiring. You can get a job as an essential worker. So now you can go to work and you can be an essential worker and you're not going to kill anyone.
That comment is not playing well in many circles today. The governor suggesting that any return to normal in New York will be in concert with a reopening of the schools.
I don't know how you really open businesses without opening schools. You want me to go to work? Hallelujah. What do I do with my kids? So the two, to me, are very connected.
Schools are shut down until mid-May at the very earliest. Cuomo calling for patience on the part of New Yorkers.
This is not going to be over anytime soon.
Family Life's Dee Haley has more on how a regional reopening strategy will impact the Buffalo area.
Since Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that reopening the state will be done on a regional basis, Erie County Executive Mark Poloncarz said he's already in conversation with Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul, who is now leading the reopening effort for Western New York. Officials say reopening will not happen all at once, and watching the number of test positive cases and hospitalizations will remain necessary as reopening will be driven by that data. While hospitalizations have reportedly stabilized in Erie County, positive cases continue to increase. Dee Haley, Family Life News.
Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf using a red, yellow, and green color-coded scheme by which the state will operate as it works to reopen.
Ultimately, the virus is going to set the timeline, not us.
The governor hopes to begin reopening parts of central and northwestern Pennsylvania as soon as May 8th, but it will not be business as usual.
We'll continue to limit things like high-risk activities such as keeping school buildings closed, restricting restaurants to curbside pickup or delivery only, allowing retail to reopen with protections in place for workers and customers.
Pennsylvania Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine.
As we return to work and to many of our normal routines, remember, it is still vital to wear a mask when in public and to maintain social distancing.
The governor says the state must be careful to balance the needs of the economy with people's health concerns.
Let's get this pandemic under control so we can put plans on our schedules and get back to doing the things we love.
And as I always say, stay calm, stay home. Stay safe.
Pennsylvania coroners are concerned with the way the state's reporting COVID-19 fatalities. That part of the story from Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
The Lycoming County coroner accuses Pennsylvania's health department of, quote, Monday morning quarterbacking deaths in connection to coronavirus. Dr. Charles Kiesling Jr., who also heads the State Coroners Association, says the COVID-19 reporting system used by PA's health secretary is unreliable. Kiesling is upset that the state has listed two coronavirus fatalities in his county. The coroner says, as far as he knows, no one has died yet from the virus in the Williamsport area. Kiesling urges residents to refer to his Facebook page for official information, not the state health department. Pennsylvania public health officials are facing similar pushback from the Sullivan County coroner, Wendy Hastings, who is also puzzled why the state attributes one death in that county to COVID-19. She says the state is falsely inflating the numbers. A change in the state reporting system caused a nearly 30% jump in the statewide death count over a 24-hour period. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. New York State has started its COVID-19 testing and tracing program. Here's Family Life's Bill Price.
Yeah, Governor Cuomo says it's going to be done across New York in order to properly measure the spread of the virus.
Tracing will be ramping up incrementally going forward. When do you stop ramping up? Maybe never.
Cuomo says the testing will determine when parts of the state can open back up. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
Tracing is literally hunting down each and every case, every individual, and making sure that they're interviewed about the people in their life they've been in close contact with in the previous days, and then following up with those people.
Governor Cuomo says the state needs an army of tracers to track down folks who've interacted with those who've tested positive for COVID-19. Bill Price, Family Life News.
Thank you, Bill. Another Chemung County, New York business in trouble with the law for violating social distancing rules.
We received over a dozen complaints from customers at Walmart over a four-day period. So you can only warn a place so many times. The sheriff's office has been there, so we had a meeting with the public health director and the sheriff and the county attorney, and this will be one final notice, and then we'll have to take our next step.
Chemung County Executive Chris Moss says if the Walmart does not comply by the close of business today, he'll shut it down.
We're being sent photos from customers who are taking photos of the employees who are working without masks. I mean, there just comes a point where we have to address it.
Last week, Chemung County temporarily closed the Lowe's store just down the street from that Walmart for similar violations. Well, a dairy expert at Penn State says coronavirus is hitting Pennsylvania's farmers especially hard. So hard, he adds, the industry will not be able to withstand any more economic body blows.
Dave Schwartz is an assistant director for animal assistance programs with Penn State Extension. He says the long-term outlook for dairy appears to be stable in the state, but says the crisis will complete an irrevocable change in Pennsylvania's dairy industry that is, understandably, seen as a negative by people wishing that things could return to the way they were. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
And there's evidence today that animals are getting coronavirus. Family Life's Tracy Lynn.
Yeah, two pet cats in New York State have tested positive for coronavirus, becoming the first known domesticated animals in the U.S. with the disease. The house cats live in different parts of the state, and both are expected to recover. The findings come after coronavirus cases were confirmed in tigers and lions at the Bronx Zoo. U.S. authorities say while some animals can get the virus from people, there's no indication the animals are transmitting the disease to humans. Still, the CDC is recommending people prevent their pets from interacting with other animals outside their home. Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
Thank you, Tracy. It's draft night. Sports next, the two-minute drill with Sonny Delfiette.
Yeah, Bob, it's NFL draft time. Joe Burrow has a chance to join some very exclusive company if the LSU quarterback winds up going number one overall to Cincinnati. Not only could he become the ninth quarterback to win the Heisman Trophy, then be the first overall selection in the NFL draft since 1967, that will also mark the first time in the common draft era the Heisman Trophy winner has been the number one pick in three straight drafts, following Kyler Murray last year and Baker Mayfield in 2018. Better yet, Burrow could join Cam Newton, who was drafted in 2011, as the only quarterback since 1967 to become the NFL's first overall draft pick right after winning both the Heisman Trophy and the national championship. You know, the NFL is very much a family business. A pair of sons have a chance to join their fathers in making some league history. LSU tight end Thaddeus Moss and Minnesota defensive back Antoine Winfield Jr. could join the 11 previous father and sons to become first-round draft picks in 67 if their names are called in the opening 32. Pro Football Hall of Famer Randy Moss was the 21st overall pick by Minnesota in 1998. Antoine Winfield, the number 23 pick by Buffalo in 1999. Of course, it's the first ever virtual NFL draft after the league did a virtual test run earlier this week. This morning on Good Morning America, Commissioner Roger Goodell talked about what's going to happen.
The draft has always been about hope, but this year, with all that's going on in our society and around the globe, we need more experiences together, and that's what the NFL does.
The draft originally scheduled to be held in Las Vegas, but due to the pandemic, all teams are making their picks at home. The Bengals have reportedly told LSU quarterback Joe Burrow he'll be taken first. The Redskins expected to select Ohio State defensive end Chase Young second. The Detroit Lions, New York Giants, and Miami Dolphins round out the top five. The Browns pick 10th, Jets 11th, Eagles have the 21st pick. The Bills and Steelers have traded away their first-round picks. The NFL draft begins tonight at 8 on ABC and ESPN. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphia.
Excellent work. Thank you, Sonny. Still to come, the plan to reopen Pennsylvania. Trump takes issue with Georgia and the bedroom marathon. You're going to want to stick around for this. That's coming up.
Here's something for the whole family to watch during lockdown. After you go outside, of course. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Recently, a popular scientist and podcaster was asked which scientific suppositions he holds most dear. There was, of course, his belief that the world is totally understandable, and of course, that no divine intervention or starting point was required to explain life, including human beings. He failed to mention any blind spots, however, in talking about the underlying habit to think that whatever seems to be the most likely answer to a question must be the correct one. From this belief, the rest of us get cultural myths, especially the science is settled one, which is an idea that pioneers of the scientific method would find strange, to say the least. Since science studies the world through observation, hypothesizing, data collection, and testing, it is, by definition, unsettled. Mathematics might be settled, not science. Think, for example, of the sheer number of animal and plant species which are still being discovered each year. Think of the geological realities and chemical reactions and pandemic viruses that we're still trying to figure out. In light of all the uncertainty that drives our scientific exploration, is it really plausible to think that science can be certain about, you know, where everything comes from and how it got here? To explore that question further, courtesy of a wonderful bit of storytelling, check out the wonderful documentary from my friends at Exploration Films. It's called The Master Designer, The Song. Not only does the film explore the specialized designs of some fascinating animals, including the honeybee and the elk and the wolf, to name just a few, but it connects their intricacies to key stories in history. In other words, the film describes the providence and design of God from the smallest biological details to historical developments that would have been quite different without those details. For example, do you know which insect helped prevent America's defeat in the Revolution? Look, the film's fascinating, and it's beautifully done. Think the beauty and excellence of a nature documentary without the evolutionary assumptions throughout. And by the way, if you have an HD screen and a good sound system, even better. Turn the lights off and the volume up, especially when the crickets sing. Each animal studied in the film reveals a genius of design. Honeybees carve their comb into hexagons, the shape that mathematically ensures the highest possible volume of honey. The stomach of a bison contains four compartments that not only work seamlessly together, but allow it to digest even the most difficult to eat substances. Wolves' paws are padded to allow them to travel long distances over ice without freezing. Camels can lose hundreds of pounds, but thanks to their humps of fat storage, can remain healthy in the desert. Now, given the complex world as revealed by this film, the theory that life somehow evolved through natural selection just seems too simplistic. If bees had to learn slowly over millennia how to store their honey, how did the middle generation survive? If bison's stomachs gradually evolved to the highly effective, intricate systems we see now, where are the fossilized examples of all the failures? Where are the steps along the way? There are none. Between the interesting storytelling and the incredible images and footage, this is a film for people of all ages. And though I personally enjoy all that gritty food chain blood and gore you find on Animal Planet, there's none of that here to scare little eyes. Instead, the focus is on describing the intricate design of each animal, which ultimately points to the wisdom of the designer. You can pick up a DVD of The Master Designer, The Song, or it's also available to stream on various platforms, including Amazon and ChristianCinema.com. Come to Breakpoint.org and we'll tell you how to get it. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Weather next. Here's Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life weather forecast. The call for this day, cloudy skies with some patches of light rain. High temperatures in the upper 30s to the upper 40s. Cloudy tonight, into tomorrow, some rain. Low tonight, 30s and low 40s. Then the rain will end tomorrow morning, and then skies will clear from the west later in the day. The high in the mid-40s to the mid-50s. Saturday will start pretty sunny with high temps in the 50s. Rain comes in on Sunday. Maybe a little snow Sunday night.
All right, Kevin Williams, can't get rid of that snow, can we? This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Here's what's happening this Thursday afternoon, the 23rd of April. More than 20 twisters touched down last night in parts of Texas, Oklahoma, and Louisiana. Entire neighborhoods destroyed by these storms. Golf ball-sized hail pounded the city of Tulsa. Oklahoma saw as many tornadoes last night as it usually does during the entire month of April. The number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits has shot up again. 4.4 million signed up for the first time last week. That makes a total of more than 26 million over the past 5 weeks.
The numbers are tapering off just a little bit. It looks like we hit a peak in late March, early April. But let's be clear, this is a huge number of people.
Business analyst Jill Schlesinger says more Americans have filed for unemployment the past month than at any time in history, even more than during the Great Depression. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf outlined a regional approach to get the state back open for business.
The initial benchmark we're setting is for the population to have an average of less than 50 cases per 100,000 individuals over the course of 14 days in order to return to work.
The north, central, and northwestern parts of the Commonwealth will be the first to emerge from lockdown orders.
We will not just be flipping a switch and going from closed to open. And ultimately, the virus is going to set the timeline, not us.
The color-coded COVID-19 reopening plan comes in three stages. Red, where the state is right now. Yellow, where the state hopes to be May the 8th. And green, where Pennsylvania might be weeks or maybe months from now. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says local officials can blame him for the continued coronavirus closure.
The governor says he knows there's political pressure out there to reopen the state and get the economy moving. But his focus right now is avoiding a second wave of patients.
That's what I'm worried about. And also to the local officials and local politicians. I have no problem with them blaming me.
With protesters saying they want back to work outside the state house, the governor said nothing's worse than death.
I know people want out. I get it. I know people need a paycheck. I know this is unsustainable. I also know more people will die if we are not smart.
Meanwhile, 1.2 million New Yorkers have filed for unemployment. James Flippin, New York.
President Trump says he disagrees with the decision by Georgia's governor to reopen many businesses in the Peach State tomorrow.
It's just too soon. I think it's too soon. I told the governor very simply that I disagree with his decision, but he has to do what he thinks is right.
Governor Kemp says his decision's driven by science, and he will allow hair salons, massage and tattoo parlors, gyms, dine-in restaurants, and movie theaters to reopen in days.
I think we're going to have to continue to trust our business community to do the right thing.
Georgia businesses must adhere to social distancing guidelines and take the temperatures of employees on a daily basis.
What we've always heard is social distancing, being 6 feet. You cannot do that while doing hair.
Across the country, more states are easing lockdowns. In Oklahoma, the governor says salons, spas, and pet groomers can reopen on Friday by appointment only.
We will do this safely, responsibly, and based on the data in our state.
In Florida, more beaches are reopening, and the mayor of Las Vegas wants casinos back in business.
So you don't believe there should be any social distancing? You don't believe that this is
a... Of course I believe there should be. Of course. I'm a rational.
How do you do that in a casino?
That's up to them to figure out. I don't own a casino.
The mayor, interviewed by CNN, even offered the major tourist destination up as a test case for reopening. Two more potential vaccines for the COVID-19 virus are now going to human trial. Correspondent Bill Zimfer.
One of the trials is beginning in the UK and another in Germany as the race for a vaccine continues. In the UK trial at Oxford, human trials got underway Thursday with more than 500 volunteers participating. The research director said there was an 80% chance the vaccine would be successful. In Germany, that country's first vaccine trial beginning with 200 volunteers.
Bill Zimfer reporting from Washington. Well, next at noon, pandemic problems for Pennsylvania pastors. Bill Bardoz, the senior pastor of the Slovenia and Troy Presbyterian churches in the Northern Tier, he spoke recently to our own Brandon Dixon about how the health crisis has impacted his congregations.
You've been able to see firsthand some of the impact from this coronavirus. You've been able to talk to people. Give us a glimpse of what you're seeing from this virus within your community, your congregation, that sort of thing.
It's a little bit diverse. There are different segments of people who are impacted differently. One of the big ones that I particularly have concern for is people who have family members in the hospital, maybe being treated with chemotherapy for cancer or other serious things, and they can't be with their family member in the hospital. Family members, they're all alone at a time when they most need support, and the rest of the family really wants to be there with them and is very frustrated because they can't. There's another segment of the population that is pretty much sitting back, wringing their hands in anguish over all of this, focusing totally on how this is impacting their lives. And then there's a third group that, rather than doing that, is really taking advantage of it to spend more time with their spouse, their children, really spending some quality time, and then they look beyond themselves to see how they can reach out to other people who may be going through a hard time to try to touch their life in some meaningful way, either with a phone call or a card or something tangible that they might need, taking them milk or something of that nature.
For someone like yourself that is a pastor that's probably been on quite a few of those calls at one point in time or another to visit someone in the hospital, what is that like from your perspective, and what would you offer someone that maybe has that situation or has a family member in that situation where they're isolated and sick but they can't see a visitor?
It's strange. As important as the phone call is, it's not the same as being there with them, and it has left me feeling a little bit frustrated. You want so much to be present with them physically, to hold their hand when you pray or place a hand on their arm, and you just can't do that. But I have heard some very creative ways that family members have overcome that. I heard a story just this morning of a guy that rented a boom lift, took it to the hospital, and raised it up to the third floor window so he could see his family member in their hospital room. I thought that was pretty cool. He may have gotten in trouble for that, I'm not sure, but I'm guessing he thought it was worth it either way.
Very creative, that's for sure. There are some people that are a little upset, especially in Pennsylvania. They feel like maybe the restrictions are too strong. What would you say to that, and what have you seen specifically within your own community in that regard?
Well, it's interesting. The economic system that we live in, the key word there is system, everything impacts everything else. And I think of dairy farmers who are either dumping or having their milk dumped. If it wasn't hard enough already, now they can't get their milk to market because there aren't enough plastic jugs being made or something. The demand for milk obviously being dramatically reduced because schools aren't in session. It's just very frustrating. And then every business, one way or the other, touches every other business. Even in our hospitals, we hear stories of hospitals being overwhelmed and needing to relax standards to get more nurses back on board. But here in the rural counties, the hospitals are almost empty. Lots of people are working very reduced hours, if not being laid off completely. And small local hospitals have to be approaching a financial crisis because their overhead expenses pretty much remained unchanged, and the beds are all empty because all of the non-essential things have been canceled.
You mentioned the third group of people, and these are the ones that this is not the easy road. This is the harder road to take, but to really get creative, to take the positive approach, to see things for the good that's coming out of this pandemic. What have you heard as far as stories involving some of those or things that could maybe encourage our listeners from some of those people and what they're doing?
The people that are reaching out in a positive way go through their phone directory or their church directory and just make it a point to call people. And the ones that I think are doing the best job are not necessarily calling their closest friends, but calling people that may be a little bit on the fringes, so to speak, sending out emails just to let people know, hey, I'm thinking about you, I'm praying for you, do you need anything? Is there something I can do to help you? And in addition to pastoring the churches, I have a degree in rehabilitation counseling. I do a little bit of counseling on the side, and I see other counselors talking about dealing with this by doing breathing exercises and things like that. And, you know, I read all about those things in the books somewhere in the past, too, but that's completely missing the point. Those things are not going to reduce your anxiety or your depression. The things that reduce those things are reaching out and doing something positive for the people around you. Spend a little more time in prayer. Spend a little more time in your Bible. Spend a little bit of more time looking for ways to be the body of Christ. That's what reduces people's anxieties.
That'll preach any day of the week. Bill Bardo, a Presbyterian pastor from Pennsylvania. This is the Noon Report on Family Life.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Low pressure will be delivering rain at times over the next 12 to 24 hours, focusing on parts of Pennsylvania and central New York. In that feature's wake, high pressure builds in to clear the skies late tomorrow night. Set us up for a nice start to the weekend. Won't end that way, though. Low pressure brings more rain later Sunday night and some snow for some. The call for this day, cloudy skies with some patches of light rain. High temperatures in the upper 30s to the upper 40s. Cloudy tonight, into tomorrow, some rain. Low tonight, 30s and low 40s. Then the rain will end tomorrow morning, and then skies will clear from the west later in the day. The high in the mid-40s to the mid-50s. Saturday will start pretty sunny with high temps in the 50s. Rain comes in on Sunday. Maybe a little snow Sunday night.
All right, Kevin. Finally, noon at a time when many of us feel like we're running in circles around our home. One Russian man is literally doing just that, running around his bedroom, actually. He ran 62 miles in a span of just over 10 hours. Dean Muchu has our report.
He ran laps in his bedroom, around his bed, for a total of 62 miles. And not because he was stir-crazy. The Russian distance runner had been training for a 155-mile race in the Sahara Desert, but that got canceled due to the pandemic. So he decided to keep his skills sharp during the lockdown. He even posted live updates on Instagram during the 10-hour run.
Whatever it takes to get you through. That's the world we live in. Thursday, April 23rd. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.